Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Ranking of the Stars, a podcast in which I, Jack Dielo Boblik, and my lovely, luscious, left-turn-only wife...
I am Emily Dielo Boblik.
I had a different one, but I forgot and I panicked.
Oh, no! Oh, no, I'm going to be wondering what the other one was.
You and me both. Well. Watch in chronological order every single movie that has won the Oscar for Best Picture...
But not this week.
Usually, yeah, not this week. This week is our 1950s retrospective, because we have finally reached the end of another decade. We have no poster to look at, we have no fun facts, we have no cast members.
Oh, that's a sad week.
All we have is the best and worst characters and moments and styles from the previous decade.
Should we go over the categories first?
Sure.
All right.
It's been so long since we've done this, I don't remember the structure for it, so.
The first category will be best male character.
Yep, then best female character.
Worst male character.
Worst female character.
Best visuals overall.
Best visual specific scene.
Most stylish.
Best writing.
We are adding a new category for this decade, and it's quote of the decade.
Yep. Worst moment of the decade.
And best moment of the decade.
Closing it all out with the crowning moment of the decade.
Going out with a bang.
Yep. We hop right into it with our best male character.
Yes.
So nominees for this are Father Barry from On the Waterfront.
Terry Malloy from On the Waterfront.
Phileas Fogg from Around the World in 80 Days.
General Saito from The Bridge on the River Kwai.
And Passepartout, also from Around the World in 80 Days.
All right. I think last time we did this by a process of elimination.
I do remember that. Yep.
So who do you think we should go first?
Who would take it off this list? Who's the weakest link? Probably Terry Malloy.
Yeah, I think so too. He had some good moments. I liked his character arc in On the Waterfront. I like the fact that, you know, he was sort of a teeny tiny gangster at the beginning and rebelled. Yeah, he's a bum.
He's a bum.
He rebelled against the machine, yeah. Against the crooks.
Johnny Friendly.
Yeah.
Yeah, scene in the back of the taxi with him was great. Good acting, good performance, but Priest was better, so he's not even the best character in his own movie. So,
yep.
Bye, Terry.
Bye.
Honorable mention.
I'm going to take Phileas Fogg, next. He's a good character. He's not problematic overall, but I don't think he's the best on this list.
The biggest problem with Phileas Fogg is that he had the bad luck of being in a movie with an absolutely...
A delight of a man?
A shining star, yes. Of a performance.
Yeah. Yeah, so...
If he had been in any other decade, he would have had a chance, but...
Yes.
Fogg must go... And
who's next?
So what we're really deciding now is who gets third place and who gets second place.
Sure.
I mean, the winner is Passepartout of this whole thing. So
spoiler alert.
So who's better? I mean, come on now. There's no one who even comes close to his performance in this decade or the other decades we watch either. So, who gets second place, General Saito or Father Barry?
I mean, I think you like General Saito a little bit more than I did. So, to me, Father Barry would be second and then General Saito third.
There were some eyebrows raised when, yes. When I suggested putting him on the best male character.
Yeah, like, what?
To which I say, look, he's just trying to do his job, all right?
That doesn't mean that he's not a piece of shit.
Who could say how we would react in the exact same situation under that kind of pressure? General Saito is all of us.
That's true. I'll concede that to you.
Yeah. Shame he didn't have a larger role to play in that movie.
Yeah, he wasn't enough in the movie. Like, he was a character, like, mostly in the first half of the movie, and then he kind of just disappeared.
Yeah, his spirit gets broken, and then he just kind of haunts around in the background like a ghost.
Yeah.
So, yeah. for that reason, Father Barry's there the whole time. I can accept having Father Barry.
And he's got some, like, every time he's on screen, he's got really good speeches. He has amazing interactions with all the characters that he's around.
Yeah, it's a crucifixion.
Yeah. he's a little more consistent in his character.
Yeah. Yep.
I can appreciate that.
So silver medal to Father Barry and...
Bronze.
Bronze to General Saito. And Passepartout just runs away with this.
Yes.
What an amazing performance.
Yeah, just the writing was really great for... And see, that's something that's... In the novel, Passepartout was more of just of a side gig. They involved him a little more, like way more in the movie. And the writing for his character was great. Whereas in the last movie we watched, Ben-Hur... The character of Esther in the novel was not non-existent, but was a minor character. And the writing for her in the movie was so bad. They tried to expand her character for the movie, but the writing was just like not good at all. So it's interesting that for minor characters in the novel that were expanded in the movie, we get like very different writing and representation.
Yeah, for Passepartout, they knew the strength of that actor, and they were just giving him license to be himself.
Yeah.
Where for Esther, they were just trying to shoehorn in a by-the-numbers basic romance plot, and it just was uninspired and just limp and soulless.
Yeah, it's not just the writing, it's definitely the actor.
Whereas Passepartout is, they just point the camera at him and they're, all right, go. And then he just has to be himself. And it's wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah. Passepartout, best male character.
Of this decade or maybe any other.
Oof.
Who can say?
All right.
Best female character.
We have Margot from All About Eve.
Clara Snyder, who was the love interest of Marty. Look, audience, look. This was slim pickings, all right?
Yeah, there were not a whole lot of choices for this one.
A very weak decade for female characters.
We have Milo Roberts in An American in Paris.
And showing just how much of a slim pickings there were, our final entry for best female character is the calendar girl from General Saito's calendar in The Bridge Over the River Kwai.
Yep.
Not even a flesh and blood woman, a picture of a woman.
Yeah.
That's how few choices we had.
All right.
Clara's gotta go. Clara's just, she's a nothing character.
But she's so sweet. She's the least problematic female character we've seen this entire podcast.
You know what sweet is synonymous with? Boring.
Wow. Wow.
I couldn't even remember her name. We had to look it up. And don't lie, you couldn't either. You didn't know who she was.
No, but to be fair, I forget a lot of these too. Like, I had to look them up, pretty much everybody, so... okay. I'll concede. Yeah, Clara was sweet. She was unproblematic. She was a good romantic interest for this movie. But yeah, she's
bland.
Yes. Yeah. I would call it more like bland more than boring.
Inoffensive.
You know? Yes.
And therefore uninteresting.
Sure.
So that leaves us with Milo, the calendar girl, and Margot.
All right, the calendar girl was more goof than anything else. Like, I
will die on this hill.
I did not protest to put her on the list because it was her or the other woman that's on screen for like not even 2 minutes in The Bridge on the River Kwai.
She is serving her country by keeping the enemy distracted.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, we were just desperate to get four people on this list.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't be so skimpy. Yeah. Fine. The calendar girl can go.
I feel like we're going to fight about this. About the, like, Margot or Milo.
Oh, no, it's definitely Margot taking the gold for this.
Really? I would have thought that you would fight harder for Milo.
No, I mean, I have a personal endearment, I guess, for middle-aged women who are just a complete mess. Just, like, sloshing their wine all over the place and just trying to scoop up the young, hot artists from the street.
Yeah, Milo was also was problematic. Like, her jealousy, her, like, pay attention to me. I'm going to give you all the, you know, everything that you need, everything that you want to be an artist.
And, yeah, she's a mess.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I found it endearing, and you found it...
I find it annoying.
Yeah, annoying.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Margot is great.
I mean, Margot suffers from the same problem. Like, she's a star, and she wants everybody to just pay attention to her, even though she's declining and just refuses to admit it.
Yeah, but she takes it to such heights of melodrama that it becomes endearing with that, the guests want to know where the body is. You're looking at it. And she points at herself.
They're like, buckle up, it's going to be a bumpy night.
Yeah. Sit next to the piano player and he's like, can I play another song? No, yeah. Play it again.
But I've already played it 6 times.
So it'll be 7. Yeah, Margot's great.
All right.
Best female character.
Margot from All About Eve.
Yep. Worst male character, Gaston. From Gigi.
Yeah. The great Sebastian from The Greatest Show on Earth.
Captain Dana Dynamite Holmes from Here to Eternity.
Honoré Lachaille from Gigi.
And Sergeant Warden, also from Here to Eternity.
All right. That's a strong list for worst male character.
Yeah, I think worst characters are usually easier to find than best characters in every decade.
Yeah.
See if that ever shifts, but I don't know. I nominate the great Sebastian.
To get rid of him first?
To fall from this list the same way he fell from the trapeze.
Yeah, he's an asshole, but he's not necessarily, like, the worst male character we've seen.
No, he's just an arrogant prick.
Yeah.
Normal garden variety.
Yeah. Arrogant, has very high self-esteem.
Womanizer.
Of himself, yes, that too.
Shameless womanizer.
Yeah.
It was cute when it was Passport 2, but...
Yeah, but not...
Well, the thing about Passport 2 is, we never really talked about that aspect of his character, the womanizer part, where it's like...
He gets distracted more than anything.
It's so harmless. Like, yeah. It's the goofy, cartoonish kind of womanizing where he's just like, oh, pretty lady, and his eyes get big, but he never actually does anything or, like, takes any action.
Yeah, whereas with, like, the great Sebastian, as soon as he arrives at the circus, it's clear that he's already gone out and probably slept with a lot of the women in the circus.
Yeah, for Passport 2, there's a very boyish quality to his, like, oh, yeah. Pretty lady.
Yeah.
But for Great Sebastian's trying to fuck.
Whereas Passport 2 is like, you know, those characters in cartoons where they see a woman with a big pair of boobs and you get, like, giant eyes.
Yep.
Like,
the wolf from Looney Tunes. Yep.
Yeah.
Ooh. Yep.
Bye-bye, the great Sebastian.
Yep. Not even bad enough to get a worst award.
Yeah. I would take off Captain Dana Holmes next because, yes, he's a shitty character, but he's also not on screen very much. Like, we don't really have enough time to see the depths of his shittiness.
Yeah, we hear about it secondhand after it's happened.
Yeah.
The causing the miscarriage.
Yeah.
Or not taking his wife to the hospital and just being trapped in a loveless marriage. Yep.
Yeah, the only thing that could make me keep him on the list is like when he witnesses the fist fight between the soldiers and doesn't try to stop it. Like, he's enjoying the show.
Yeah, ruthlessly hazing.
Yeah.
Robert E. Lee.
Yes.
For not boxing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, boom goes the dynamite, you say?
Yes.
Off this list? Sure. So that leaves us with Gaston, Sergeant Warden, and Honoré. I'd say Sergeant Warden next.
Yeah, I agree.
Because he's part of a duo of toxic characters where I think without each other, neither one of them would be as bad.
Yeah. But he also has some redeeming qualities. Yeah. I feel like that scene in the bar when he defends Robert Ely and the character played by
Frank Sinatra.
Frank Sinatra.
Whose name is?
I don't remember.
I don't either.
I was going to say Matzo, but no, that's Fatso in that movie. And it's not Frank Sinatra the other guy.
It's not Ange.
No. No. Anyway, yeah, he's got some redeeming qualities, but just not enough. He's kind of like a mild character. He's got some shittiness in him, but also, like, I don't really care much more than that about his character.
Yeah. Not rotten to the core like these other two. We have remaining Gaston and Honoré.
Yeah, I mean...
A family fight.
I mean...
Yeah, it's the pedophile.
Yes.
The pedophile takes the gold.
Yes.
Kind of hard to top that.
Yeah. We've never encountered a character who, right from the get-go, like, opens the movie... And immediately just shits the bed so bad.
Yeah, just stares down the barrel of the camera and says, yes. I like little girls. Ugh.
Yeah, it just set the tone for this entire movie. Mm-hmm. And within the first 2 minutes of this movie, we knew it was not going to be enjoyable.
And it is not just rotten, but is smug and pleased with himself about being rotten.
Yeah.
And the movie, like, celebrates it. And it's
just... Oh, yeah, because it definitely continues throughout the whole movie. The attitude, the mindset about, you know, courting women and just and playing with them and enjoying the sight of little girls, it continues. So, yeah. He... opens the movie and sort of closes it too. Yep. And I'm like, no.
He bookends this awful experience.
Yeah.
He is the shit cherry on top of a shit sundae.
Yeah. Sorry that this is a fellow countryman, Maurice Chevalier, but yeah, he's gotta go.
So Honoré gets the honor A.
of being the worst male character of the decade.
Yeah, let's not gloss over Gaston, though, because Gaston was a real piece of shit, too. Especially that ending where he just drags her out of the restaurant.
Oh, yeah.
Against her will, and she's, like, begging and pleading and crying with him to talk, and he just doesn't say anything and just physically assaults her, basically.
And he was also annoying, like, it's a bore. Like, dude, you've got all the money you could want in the world. You can enjoy anything you pretty much want in the entire goddamn world, and you think that everything is fucking boring. Like,
yeah.
You know what's boring? You and your attitude.
Yeah, having to listen to rich people complain about being rich.
Yeah.
What a cross to bear, Gaston.
Yeah. What a burden.
Yep. Here's your silver medal, you shithead. Worst female character.
Worst female character. I'll let you go first.
We have Lise Bouvier?
Yeah, Lise.
Lise Bouvier from An American in Paris.
Yeah. We have Karen Holmes from Here to Eternity.
We have Eve Harrington / Gertrude
Slezinski
from All About Eve.
We have Grandmama from Gigi.
We have Aunt Alicia from Gigi.
And we have Gigi herself.
From Gigi.
From Gigi.
The titular Gigi. The whole family showed up for this category.
But also, Gigi and Lise Bouvier from An American in Paris are played by the same actress.
Yep.
I think it's the first time during this podcast and during the retrospective that we've nominated the same actress for the same category.
Yep, and it's worst.
And it's worst female.
She is not. She's 0 for 2 on her appearances.
Yeah, this should not be something to celebrate.
Also telling that we have... two more worst female characters than best female characters for this decade.
Yeah.
And one of the best was a goof picture nominee. Yes. not a great decade for the characters with vagoos.
Yep.
Who's going off first? I'd say Lise Bouvier, probably.
Lise Bouvier.
Yeah, her. She's very much like the love interest of Marty. She's nothing. She barely exists as a character.
Yeah. At the same time, I did not appreciate the way she played with her two love interests. Oh,
she's just young and can't decide. No.
Sure. But also, that's just... It's just shitty manners, and that's not the way you treat people.
Yep.
But...
Not great.
Yeah. But overall,
not inoffensive, the
not the worst.
Yep.
Yeah. For the same reason, I think I would take maybe Grandmama off the list. She's not given a whole lot of screen time. I think she has good intentions towards Gigi. They just don't come out great.
She is the least offensive of that trio, I think.
Yes.
She does have genuine affection for Gigi. It's just she's also trapped in this god-awful social circle and is not really trying to break out of it. So she does some, but she could do more. So she's not great, but she's also not terrible.
Yeah. It's never really explicitly said in the movie, but I also feel like Aunt Alicia has a little bit of a grip on her.
Oh, she's definitely the one pushing for the training and all that more.
Yeah. So she's trying to take care of Gigi, just not in the best way.
She's always the one being like, oh, we have to have a meeting and we have to plan our strategy for how we're going to squeeze the most money out of this, I mean, love, out of Gaston.
Right.
You know.
Yeah. So.
Never wear a second-rate jewel, Gigi. Always hold out for the best.
Grandmama is off the list.
Is off the list. I would take Gigi herself off as well, because she's a child, which makes her arc in the movie gross, but it's not the character's fault.
Yeah, it's just that's...
It makes everyone around her worse.
Yeah.
Because she's a child that they're preying on.
Exactly. I did not appreciate some of the writing for her, that scene when...
Oh, she's a brat.
Yeah, she's a brat, and also I think part of it is just the actress herself. Has a lot of mannerisms, and the way her intonation is just off to me, and it just sounds she sounds a lot more dramatic than I think the writing is meant to be.
You would think it would embarrass all the people here in Paris to be thinking every moment of love. She says as she flops dramatically on the golden bird couch.
Yeah, a little too many eye rolls and
Will you buy me chocolate, Gaston? No.
It's silly.
Yeah. I forgot that. Why would I dress up for a friend at Celle? Yeah. That's not how you talk in French or English.
Nope.
She's inventing her own Gijanese.
Yeah, so I think I would attribute more of her worst qualities to the actress more than to the character.
Yep. Yep, yep. Who's our next removal?
Ooh.
We've got Aunt Alicia, Eve Harrington, and Karen Holmes left.
Oh, that's a hard choice.
Who'd you nominate for bronze? I know who I'd go with. But it's not my turn.
I'd probably go with Eve Harrington.
For bronze?
Yeah.
She's...
Okay.
I was going to say Karen Holmes for bronze. Because just like Sergeant Warden... Her shittiness is due to the fact that she's in part of that toxic duo on her own. I don't think she's that bad.
I guess, but we don't... we only get scenes with her with other characters, so I don't know what she looks like on her own.
Yeah.
I only have a base for her when she's with other characters, and she mostly sucks.
Yep. She is usually the one instigating the issues that couple has.
Not the one on the beach, though.
Not the one on the beach.
The beach scene is definitely all Warden.
Yes, but after that, it's him showing up to the bench and her being like, "Oh, you were 5 minutes late. I guess you don't want to be in this relationship." It's lady, we've been seeing each other for less than a week.
And the whole thing about caring so much about status and caring so much about, like, rank or, like, what position you have in the army or not, like, it was definitely superficial.
Yep.
And that's just shit I don't care about, honestly.
Yep.
It's always annoying to see that trait in a female character on screen because it gives such a bad representation of who and what women are and what we care about. It just, yeah, it's always annoying when characters are written like that.
Yeah. Is she worse than Eve, though, for being such a snake in the grass? Like, you could say that Karen was a victim of her circumstances, where Eve was actively...
She was actively trying to scam other people.
In active pursuit of being shitty.
Yeah. And being really good at it, mm-hmm. too. Because...
Had us fooled for a while.
Yeah. Okay, you've convinced me.
So then Karen will take bronze, and it's a fight between Eve and Aunt Alicia.
Yes.
I mean... I think attempting to prostitute a child is worse than stabbing people in the back to get movie roles.
Yeah, like, not only attempting to prostitute a child, but also just take advantage of people who have somewhat good intentions. Because Gaston, as bad as he is, he does have, like, a genuine friendship with Grandmama and cares about Gigi. And she just wants to get as much money out of him as she can. So, yeah.
And a testament to just how awful this movie was, she was still probably the best character in it. With her holdout for the good jewels and her bathtub with the lace all over it and... Yep.
She's got some great lines. Mm-hmm. As shitty as she is, she's got some great lines.
Small kings, hold out for the best jewels. Don't eat your tiny bird like a cannibal. Mm. More marriages have been dissolved due to poor table manners than infidelity.
Yeah. So, Aunt Alicia.
Yeah, worst female. Though probably the most... endearing worst female character we've had. I will give her that.
In what way?
Her lines about, like, waiting for the best jewelry and just being her best shitty self.
Oh, see, I don't see that as endearing as much as just, like, cleverness on the part of the writers.
It hits kind of those same notes for me that Milo does, where, like, oh man, this lady's a mess, and it's kind of entertaining.
I can see that.
Yeah. Just, like, her world is in flames. She's this shut-in who has no social life, but she still just walks around in her apartment in her dresses and jewels and giant powdered wigs. Like, this lady's nuts. She takes it.
Yep.
She held out for the best. She got the gold medal. Congratulations, Aunt Alicia. All right, best visuals overall. We have The Greatest Show on Earth.
We have An American in Paris.
We have Around the World in 80 Days.
And Ben-Hur.
For best visuals overall, I think The Greatest Show on Earth can be our first chop off this block.
First to go?
Yeah, it's just the circus. There's a lot of variety, but come on, it's just the damn circus.
It's the damn circus at the same time. Like, we both marvel that, like, everything that we were shown in the movie, especially when we were seeing those, like, behind the scenes of how the circus comes to life.
Yeah, but that was more for the, like, documentary aspect of it than the visuals themselves. Mm. It's neat to see the big tent go up, but it's nothing, like, mind-blowing.
Yeah.
It's nothing I think about in my day-to-day life.
Sure. So, Greatest Show on Earth.
The big top has collapsed.
I'm hesitating between Around the World in 80 Days and An American in Paris.
I would take An American in Paris. before that, I think Around the World in 80 Days is a contender for gold.
All right, make your case.
For Around the World in 80 Days, I mean, it does suffer a little bit from me saying, like, it's just a damn circus. It is just a bunch of, you know, scenes of places in real life, like actual locales. They're not necessarily creating any of the stuff, but just the sheer variety and the sunset shots and the theater they go to in Japan and the shrines they see in Japan and the boat that was so cool. I made a model of it, and the temples and the sunsets and the trains and the air balloon and aerial shots of Europe. Would vote against your own homeland.
All right. I hear you. We're keeping it on the list.
Yep.
I mean, An American in Paris is also my goddamn homeland.
Even more so, but also you were exhausted by that movie.
I was annoyed to a level that I had not been annoyed in a long time.
Yeah, you said, and I quote, "Come on!" During the final and most visually spectacular scene. Although they also did have that Beetlejuice party.
Yeah.
But that was a more specific moment than an overall thing.
Yeah.
So we can axe An American in Pelly.
Yeah.
And give it the bronze, and then it's a fight between Ben-Hur and Around the World in 80 Days.
All right, hear me out.
All right.
I'm going to make a fool of myself for this one, but I got to turn around and get rid of Ben-Hur. If it's between Around the World in 80 Days and Ben-Hur, like, Ben-Hur the most stunning thing to me is the chariot scene.
The chariot scene, the crucifixion.
Yeah. It's not like I wasn't stunned the entire time. I wasn't in awe of the movie the entire time we were watching. Like, there were very specific scenes where, like, the craftsmanship, everything that's on screen is just absolutely amazing. It's been designed. It's been very thoughtfully and carefully crafted and choreographed and all that, but I wasn't, amazed at the whole thing.
It doesn't have the variety that Around the World in 80 Days does.
Yeah.
And you can also tell that there are specific moments where they put way more effort and budget into.
Yeah.
Like, the chariot race gets a ton of attention and money, as it should, but then you have those other scenes where they're basically, like, on a dark stage because they don't want you to see that it's a set.
Yeah.
So it's just, they're in the abyss, basically.
Yeah,
and, you know, like, they did a great job with all the armor and stuff, but, like, goddamn, you've seen one Roman soldier, you've seen all of them.
pretty much.
It's more that Ben-Hur seeks to, like, overwhelm you,
mm-hmm,
than be actually visually interesting. It's just that there's a lot of it.
Rather than when we were watching Around the World in 80 Days, I found myself sort of taking on the point of view of Passepartout and looking at everything and being amazed, being in awe of everything that we were seeing, the different locations, how they were getting there. Everything was, it was beautiful. It made me want to go and travel more.
Yeah. Ben-Hur is like one of those restaurants where they have enormous portions. So you get like a huge, like 2-foot-tall stack of meat when you order it. And then Around the World in 80 Days is just an all-you-can-eat buffet.
With a lot of great amuse-bouche.
Yeah. Temples and boats and everyone in, area appropriate clothing and ostriches with hoods on. And, an amazing movie. So gold goes to Around the World in 80 Days, and Jesus picks up a silver medal. And Paris gets the bronze.
Yep.
And the circus gets nothing.
Nothing.
You'll get nothing and like it, you clowns. And next we have best visuals for a specific scene.
Starting with the Japanese theater in Around the World in 80 Days.
The infinite mirror fractal at the end of All About Eve.
The chariot race in Ben-Hur.
And the taxicab scene from On the Waterfront.
That's a hard one.
Yeah, this is one of our strongest categories.
Yes. And, like, in all the retrospective episodes we've done, like, this is one of the strongest categories.
Yep. And once again, we need to say, what is style?
No, that's not the that's not this one. That's not most stylish.
This oh, is this best visual. I'm an idiot. Style is forgetting what category you're in, apparently. Jesus.
Yeah, we're still just in best visual for a specific scene.
Look, it's been 120 degrees for the past 3 weeks. My brain is mush, all right? Cut me some slack.
Yeah, and we're doing this podcast with no AC and no fans on, so yeah. We're roasting here.
Ugh.
If I have to take one off at first, I think I would probably go with the Infinite Mirror.
The Infinite Mirror?
Yes.
Really? I would. Yes. I would cut the taxi cab scene first. I mean, that's more...
The taxi cab...
It's more about the mood,
More about the mood and the emotions and the conversation that takes place between the brothers.
Yep.
Yeah. Once again, you're right. Taxi cab scene can go. Yep. It was a beautiful moment in the movie, though. Like, it was beautifully written, well-timed in the movie. Also, when it takes place, and just, yeah, the raw emotions you see in both actors, it's not just the writing, like, they put so much of themselves into the scene. It was beautiful. Like, I remember, like, having tears in my eyes watching it.
Yeah, it was you, Charlie. And the intimacy you get from being in the back of a taxi cab.
Yeah.
The whole universe is like 3 feet wide.
Yeah.
And it's just these two brothers.
That was beautiful.
It may come back in later categories.
Ooh.
But for now, we must say goodbye to it. Which leaves us with Infinite Mirror Fractal, the Japanese Theater from All Around the World in 80 Days, and the Chariot Race.
All right, then I vote for the Infinite Fractal for to go for now, because
go for bronze.
It needs to go.
It needs to go?
Yes.
It was such a good visual metaphor. It summed up the whole plot.
Sure, I agree with you, but again, it's like, it's a visual trick.
Yeah, it's something you can do in your house.
Exactly.
We can't.
It's not something that they had to invent or play with, or like they didn't have to design any, like, obviously CGI doesn't exist in that era, but. Yeah, it's just a practical thing.
Yeah. Might be the most clever visual, but that doesn't necessarily make it the best.
Yes.
All right. We smashed the mirror. And you did it, so the 7 years of bad luck is on you. Which leaves us with the Chariot Race and the Japanese Theater. It's almost unfair because the Chariot Race is so damn long.
Yeah.
But also, like...
But also, there's a lot more to it than the theater scene.
Yeah.
Like, there's so much choreography. There's so much that happens. It's stunning in itself just because of...
The logistics of it,
yeah. All the choreography that had to take place. All the planning. When you look at it, you get stressed out for, you know, when people... fall off their chariot and they have to be carried out of the arena. You just get, yeah, you get stressed out for those people. You know, oh, are they going to get out in time?
Yep. The arena is crazy to look at. All the riders and chariots are differently styled. Masala has those sweet knives on his wheels that he bought from the shop next to the Hot Topic.
Yeah. Like, you understand why it's such an iconic scene in cinematic history.
Yeah, absolutely. Damn that theater in Around the World in 80 Days, though.
It was beautiful, too.
Yeah, but also probably just a real place they filmed in. So, yeah. Knocks for that.
And also probably part of the reason why it's on this list is because of our obsession with Japan.
Yeah. But it was also beautiful.
But it was also neat, yeah.
But come on, yeah, the Chariot Race has to be. Judah gets the gold in the race and this category.
Yep.
Now we're on to most stylish.
And what a style?
Whatever we feel like it is in the moment.
I would say, like, looking back on the list we made here and for the 30s and 40s, I think it's more like a mood that's really created by the movie, and like an identity that's created by the movie for itself.
Intentional artistic flair.
Yeah.
Is what I would say if you put a gun to my head.
Sure.
So sure. We have the bridge on the River Kwai.
We have on the waterfront.
We have an American in Paris.
And around the world in 80 days.
I think the bridge on the River Kwai can go.
Sure.
I was really impressed with the opening font for this movie. Mm-hmm. It really made it feel like leaps and bounds more modern than anything we'd watch.
Yeah.
It felt... That's like 70s movie font. Like, oh, we're watching a movie about Vietnam is exactly what it felt like when this movie started. And they do some clever stuff with like camera angles and stuff like that. But it's not up to par with the other stuff on here, yeah. I don't think.
Yeah.
Honorable mention.
Next. I kind of want to take off An American in Paris.
I'm completely fine with that.
Just because, like... They have some beautiful sets and, like, amazing costumes. The dance scenes are great and all that. But there are so many scenes where it's so obvious that it's a set.
Yep.
Like, I get that, you know, budgets and techniques and all that are not... They're not up there compared to, like, movies nowadays. But, come on. Like, if I can see that it's a set, like, I can't take the movie seriously.
And also, style has to do with being an individual, right? And this reminded us both of Mary Poppins, so it's not even that unique in its style.
Yeah, and it's recreating the mood of a certain era, I would say, in time. It's borderline cartoonish and stereotypical sometimes in the way that people are dressed. Because they're in Paris, and we have a certain image of what Parisians look like.
Yeah, you could absolutely imagine some, like, cartoon animals coming in from off-screen yeah. and dancing with the people.
Yeah.
Like they do.
Too many midi skirts and too many berries for my taste.
Yeah. It's gotta go.
Yeah.
And so it does. Which leaves us with On the Waterfront and Around the World in 80 Days. I think the winner between those two is On the Waterfront.
Yes.
Yeah.
I agree with that.
Yeah. Incredible use of lighting and shadows and even experimental stuff. Remember when he confesses to the girl and they just overlay it with the sounds of the dock and you can't really hear it?
Mm-hmm.
And then that weird, even if you don't like the weird ending, you still got to give them props for going for it and making a weird, surreal ending where he's just like walking through that line of guys just watching him slowly stumble his way towards the open door where the boss stands silently watching.
Yeah. I appreciate also, like, I know that it's in black and white because it's sort of a noir movie.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I applaud the fact that in an era where they could have done this movie in color, they still chose to do it in black and white, which adds something
yeah.
to the mood of the movie.
I think it's definitely in the same vein as Casablanca, where it would be ruined if it were in color.
Yes. Oh. Yeah. Oh, like that scene in the back of the taxi cab.
Oh, that'd be terrible.
It would be terrible. It would be awful in color.
No color should exist in that moment. It should be as black as what they're saying.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Most stylish On the Waterfront. Silver medal to Around the World in 80 Days. Certainly had its style, but more stylish in the writing, I think.
I think so. And it's not like, it didn't have its own style, really. Like we said before, we get a lot of, not necessarily sets because we're mostly on location. We're in different countries. We see, you know, real pieces of the world that exist. And it's not necessarily the film creating a mood or an identity for itself. It's beautiful just because we get to experience different parts of the world.
Yeah, it's presenting things that already existed, not things that the people who made the movie made themselves.
Yeah.
Yep. Best writing. We have Marty.
We have On the Waterfront.
We have Around the World in 80 Days.
We have All About Eve.
And The Bridge on the River Kwai. This is a tough one, too. Except for Marty.
So Marty should go first?
Yeah, I mean, I think Marty is this decade's Lost Weekend equivalent, in that they both talk about issues with men that you're not supposed to talk about.
Right.
Where this one's about loneliness and Lost Weekend was about alcoholism. So
yeah, I think what I appreciated the most about Marty is how
true to life it is.
How true to life it is, and just, it's not hesitant in actually going deep into a man's feelings for, like, that's the first time we've seen that on screen, really, in all the movies that we've seen, at least until that point, until we watched Marty. Yeah, I think that's the thing that I appreciated the most about this movie, just the fact that it's, that alone felt innovative.
Yeah, and then the hidden darkness of, like, the being a widower is the worst years of her life. And
yeah.
There's nothing left but to be one of the ladies in black in the park just waiting for the grave. Yeah.
Yeah, it had some good lines. It had it had some good...
Oh, yeah, it's not weak by any means. It's just, it's a testament to the strength of all the other contenders in this category.
Yes.
That yes. It has to go, which leaves us with four. Oof.
All right, don't get me wrong. As much as I appreciate that movie, I think The Bridge on the River Kwai has to go.
Really?
The first half was great. The second half felt like there was a real decline.
Yeah, when they started making their own material, I think, it got weaker. Because I was looking into buying the book, and it's only about 200 pages or so, so it's not a lot of source material, so
yeah.
They had to stretch it out a bit, and they didn't do as good a job with the writing and the stuff they had to make up.
Yeah, like the interactions, especially in the first, maybe not half, like in the first third between General Saito and the British commanders, those were great.
That was incredible.
They were clever, they were witty, they were really strong, but
tense.
Then yes.
Yeah.
Yes. But then after that, like, it just, there's a real dip in quality.
Yeah, we watched that movie in three sittings, and each sitting was worse than the previous one.
Yeah.
So, all right, you've convinced me.
So we're left with On the Waterfront and Around the World in 80 Days.
And All About Eve.
And All About Eve. I forgot about All About Eve.
I can guess which one you'll be suggesting we cut next.
Although it had some really clever writing too.
Margot was great. I think the character writing in All About Eve was way better than the overall plot writing.
Yes. Yeah. And I was surprised by the reveal about Eve, too. Like, I knew something was wrong, but I couldn't really pinpoint what was wrong with her.
Yeah, well, I think you could say that about all three of these ones remaining, that the character writing is stronger than the overall plot writing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Surprising to see an issue like the cyclical nature of celebrity and the empty nature of it be actually looked at in this era.
Yeah, I mean, I guess
I would not expect them to be that self-aware yet.
There are, by mid-50s, there are definitely some, like, some starlets. Like a lot
sure.
Of, yeah. People who, you know, have made their fortune from movies and are developing, their heads are getting too big.
Yeah, but in an era where we're still having people sing joyously about being pedophiles, having the moral clarity to understand that the pursuit of fame is an empty pursuit. Yeah. I don't think it wins. I think I put it in third place.
Sure.
So does gold go to On the Waterfront or Around the World in 80 Days? My heart says around the world in 80 days. My brain says on the waterfront. I know what the correct choice is, and I don't like it.
I'm the same way. I'm thinking the same thing here. Well,
a lot of the beauty in Around the World in 80 Days was Passepartout's performance, and that I don't think that was...
But that's not writing.
That wasn't the writing. That was just him being that way.
Yeah.
Fogg's a great character. His writing is great. The princess is super weak, though.
Whereas On the Waterfront, as you said, had a lot of great writing for characters, not the overall plot, but like, goddamn, the priest character?
The priest.
I don't think I've seen a priest like that in any other movie so far that I've watched, so.
The priest and the taxi cab scene. Yeah. Yeah, it's On the Waterfront. As much as I love Around the World in 80 Days, like, it's more the moments in that movie and the performances than the writing itself. Best writing, On the Waterfront and Around the World in 80 Days only gets a silver this time.
And that's okay. Just because you like something doesn't mean that it has to win all the categories. You can like something and also acknowledge its... What's the word I'm looking for? Oh, it's on the tip of my tongue.
Brutal betrayal is what you're looking for. I have stabbed this movie in the back.
Shortcomings is the word I was looking for.
It gave me a joyous and beautiful experience, and I just plunged my dagger into the soft flesh of its back.
Passepartout will not forget.
Yep.
Only three categories left.
Yep. And we're moving on to our new category, Quote of the Decade.
With the first one being A Pigeon for a Pigeon.
A Pigeon for a Pigeon.
And On the Waterfront.
Says the unnamed child with tears in his eyes as he throws a dead pigeon at Marlon Brando. Oh, that was a great movie. And Consult Your Globeser from Around the World in 80 Days. The most British man to ever exist.
We have She Is Hot, But It's Not for Gaston.
For Gaston.
From Gigi.
And Pound the Table. We have I Hate the British.
Says General Saito.
From The Bridge on the River Kwai.
We have I Don't Know, Ange. What Do You Want to Do Tonight? From Marty.
And we have What Do You Think You See? The Smashed Body of a Wretched Animal.
From Ben-Hur.
For Masala's death scene.
Yes.
Which will probably be the first to go, because I'm the only one who liked it and advocated for it. I like that scene. I know it was too
over. I was going to keep it.
I was, it's got to go eventually. It doesn't win.
Yeah, but I was going to keep it for now.
All right. What would you eliminate first?
I would say, I don't know, Inge, what do you want to do tonight? Just because it was more annoying the way that it was repeated.
It was the original Maymay. A meme before memes existed.
Mm. Yeah, it's still got to go.
Yeah, sure. I'm not going to put up any sort of fight for Marty.
It was a good goof, but at the same time, like, it's... You say it once, you say it twice, you don't need to say it a third goddamn time.
It's the kind of obnoxious thing a kid would like, which I completely understand why it caught on in schoolyards.
Of course.
At the time, because it's just obnoxious. I could cut I Hate the British next. A good funny line, but not even... It's not representative of what that movie is.
No. No.
Just it needed an honorable mention because it made us laugh.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that.
The emotion, the passion when he says it. He stabs a knife into the table.
I would probably take out A Pigeon for a Pigeon next.
That was the quote that created this category.
Yeah, that's the first one we thought of.
Yeah. But okay. It's just goofy.
It is goofy. It kind of felt out of place, honestly. It was like, ugh.
Yeah, that's what made it stand out. It's just so tonally goofy and as opposed to the rest of the movie.
Yeah.
So. All right. Now can we take off the smashed body of a wretched animal? We're deciding who gets bronze now, right?
I know.
Maybe I'd give bronze to Gaston over this one.
Yeah. Again, it was funnier because it wasn't the song, too. Like, if this came with not as part of lyrics of a song and with no musical background, I don't think it would have been as funny.
Yep. So who wins it?
Either consult your globe, sir, or what do you think you see? The smash body of a wretched animal.
Man, that last one's a good line. But also...
I would not be opposed to give it gold.
Consult your globe, sir, is something I will absolutely be saying in my day-to-day life.
After after they ask, which Alps? Yeah. There's only one kind.
Consult your globe, sir. They're both so good, but for different reasons.
Yes.
One of them is just, is cartoonishly joyous, and the other one is an actual good dramatic line. So it's just what direction you want to lean in. What do you want to reward? And I will leave this up to you because I put both these on here. So I could go either way.
For probably the wrong reason, because it's not necessarily related to the movie, but because I know I'm going to hear you say this phrase. Probably consult your globe, sir.
Wins the gold.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I definitely know it's going to become a catchphrase in our household.
It's... With this category, we might not be saying it's necessarily the best quote of the decade, but...
It's the one that provokes a reaction out of us.
For us, it is the quote of the decade, and... Yeah, I can't pretend that it's going to be anything other than... the most British man sitting in that chair and just screaming to the heavens, consult your globe, sir. Like, you hear that and a powdered wig just appears on your head.
Yeah, it was aggressively British.
Yes. Oh, and for that, we love it. And from there, we move on to worst moment of the decade.
Starting with the pointless tragedy at the end of From Here to Eternity.
I'm gonna choose to die now for no reason. Ugh. Also from Here to Eternity, we have slut shaming on the beach.
Yep. We have Marty trying to force a kiss onto Clara.
Yeah, leave that shit in the 40s and 30s, Marty, please.
Yep.
We have the Sheik being in brownface. Oof.
In Ben-Hur.
Leave that shit in the 30s.
Or don't do it at all.
Preferably never, but if you have to, please contain it to the 30s. If you really must.
And finally... Honoré's song, Thank Heavens for Little Girls.
Yep.
From Gigi.
Man, this is a contentious category too.
That's a hard one because they're really they're all
rotten, but in different ways.
If I have to choose one to take off first, I would probably go for the pointless tragedy. At the end of From Here to Eternity.
I was thinking the same thing. It's not morally repulsive. It's just
a shitty ending.
It's so obnoxious. So you really couldn't think of anything better than this. This is just lazy.
Yes. Yeah. It was lazy. And also like the very last scene on the boat where the girlfriend is like lying.
For no reason.
Yeah. Why?
Just baffling. Yeah, the whole thing is just baffling. It leaves you just confused and annoyed and not anything you want to be feeling at the end of a movie.
Yeah. When the rest of the movie was all right.
Yeah.
Like, when it was just about Robert E. Lee, like, you know, not wanting to fight and trying to, you know, resist being roped into, into fighting for the regiment. Like it was nice. It was a good. It was a good story, but
yeah, shitty realities of military life.
Yeah,
yeah. With friends like these, who needs enemies?
Yeah,
yeah.
It could have been a wonderful movie, but they just really shat the bed right at the end.
They didn't trip at the finish line. They just goddamn combusted. Didn't even cross the finish line. Just yeah. Some ashes wafted over the finish line.
Yeah. So, one down.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Marty trying to force a kiss on Carla? It's bad, but he doesn't... He does back off.
Right.
Eventually.
It's more the fact that he gets... It's not necessarily the, like, trying to plant the kiss on her. It's the fact that he gets angry at her and, like, yells at her. Gets frustrated for something that's, like... This is a first date, dude. And yeah. It's, like, it's going well. But also, like, she has the right to refuse a kiss.
Absolutely. That scene makes my skin crawl. It's just that everything else on this list makes my skin crawl more.
All right. I can agree with you.
Nothing on this list is good.
Yeah. And to be fair, like, this scene could also have been worse.
Yes, it could have been much worse. But... So what are you going to take off in between slut-shaming, brown-facing, and songs about pedophiles?
Again, don't get me wrong. It's still shitty. But I think I'm going to take the Sheik being in brownface.
Yeah.
Because as shitty and offensive as it is, it's got nothing to do really with the character or his behavior.
The character himself is fine.
Yeah.
Like, the character is respectful of the culture and all that. Is not a caricature. He's got a weird horse fetish, but...
My babies.
You know, any group of people can have a weird horse fetish, so...
Yes. And again, that's a production choice.
Yeah.
And so it was shitty, but overall, there are worse things still on this list.
Yep. So then silver medal to slut shaming and pedophile song wins gold.
Oh, abso-fucking-lutely.
Yeah, you can't. It's hard to imagine anything that could top a song glorifying pedophilia.
Nope.
Yeah.
In all the movies we watched in this decade, that was definitely the worst singular moment.
Yeah.
It's like the slut shaming on the beach was like it was bad. It was a very cringe moment.
It's rancid and it happens for no reason.
It happens for no reason. It changes the entire mood of the scene within seconds.
Whiplash.
Yeah. Just,
you go from happy making out on the beach to like, tell me about all the penises you've touched, you whore.
Yeah.
Like, why? Where did this come from? This is gross.
Yeah. And if that's the opinion you already have of her, then why are you kissing her?
Yeah.
Why are you there trying to pursue a relationship with her?
Why are you yelling at her about touching penises when you're one of the penises she's touching? This is nonsense.
Yes. Yeah, so it wasn't great. I wish this scene didn't exist, but I wish the song would just go burn in hell forever. Yeah.
The song is just like gazing into the bottomless evil in the human heart kind of thing.
Yes. And the fact that it's glorified, that it's not just the song, it's the attitude that goes with it. It's like this sweet, innocent-looking old gentleman, and because he's old, we're kind of like a little bit forgiving. And
what
the movie wants to create. It just attitude and just things like that just make you want to puke.
Yeah, that whole movie was just like the mask falling off of Hollywood, and you just getting a true glimpse into the depths of its rotten core.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Yep.
What a price to get the worst moment of the decade.
Congratulations to Honoré for his second gold in this podcast. Oh, boy. And then...
which takes us to the last category.
Our final category, the best moment of the decade. Starting with, meet my good friend, Pontius Pilate.
A.K.A. Jesus Killer.
Yeah, the Christ Killer from Ben-Hur.
Yeah. We have the officers being at gunpoint in the bridge on the River Kwai.
We have the priest's speech on the ship from On the Waterfront. It's a crucifixion, he says.
Yes, yes. We have the taxicab scene in On the Waterfront as well.
It was you, Charlie. We have Passepartout wandering around in Japan, that little silent movie that just happens in the middle of Around the World in 80 Days.
Yeah. We have the fight scene in America and Around the World in 80 Days.
When that guy is trying to sell Fogg a cigar and get him to vote, and then Fogg just smacks him on the head with an umbrella because he grabs the princess. Beautiful little moment that showcases all the characters. And finally, we have Margot speaking from the depths of her soul and saying, ha, ha, from All About Eve. Man, this is a murderer's row of moments, too.
I know. I don't know what to take up first.
I would say probably the officers at gunpoint.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a great tense scene.
It was tense. It was emotional.
They did a lot with no dialogue. Just the truck moving into position to get the right shot.
Yeah.
To cover all the officers. Oof. That gave me like a pit in my stomach. Like, oh, we need to set up the proper way to kill these people. It just the cold, clinical nature of it. Oof.
Yeah.
But then testament to the strength of these other moments. I don't think it holds up.
What next? That's hard, honestly, because all of these moments, some of them are funny, some of them are like very emotional.
Yep.
It's just me. I know you have a different relationship to this one.
To the Bible and to the Lord.
Yes, I would take Meet My Good Friend Pontius Pilate.
Yeah, absolutely. That was going to be my next pick if you didn't do it.
It's just because like it made you laugh because you had the reference of who Pontius Pilate is.
It's a very contextual moment. You know?
Yeah, for me as a person who was not raised in the church and in religion, I was like, cool, Pontius Pilate.
Yep. See, your problem is you didn't go to Bible camp. But me, over with the rest of the cool kids. And, you know, some karma for Pontius Pilate. He condemns Jesus and now we condemn him.
Exactly.
Gonna leave me with the real hard work. Oh, man, these are all great.
For different reasons, too.
Yeah, all for different reasons. But I think for similar reasons where the Pontius Pilate was just on there for laughs and goofs and because it gave us, you know, it tickled our funny bone, I think we can take off Margot's ha.
Yeah. Yeah, it was like a 1 second and it was the expression of her frustration and her paranoia.
It's like a distillation of her entire character into one noise.
Yeah.
Ha! Ha! With the eyes bulging. And it comes after her love interest telling her that she's like beautiful and amazing and a great actress. And she's just, nah!
It's not just the sound she makes. It's also her face. Her eyes, face that goes with it.
Her eyes are like popping out of her head.
I know.
She can summon that crazy indignation just at a moment's notice.
Yeah, her inner demon is coming out.
Yeah, it can flare up and then disappear in like a second.
Yeah. Yeah.
But she already got her due with the best female category, so
sure.
She's not going home empty-handed. Which leaves us with the fights, two scenes from two movies.
Yes.
The fight scene from Around the World in 80 Days, Passepartout wandering, the cab scene, and the priest's speech. God damn. Any one of these cuts is going to be brutal.
Don't hate me for it. Don't hate me for it.
Is it the fight scene?
No. I'm taking off past part two.
Past part two is wandering?
It was beautiful.
It was so beautiful.
I know.
There's no dialogue.
I know.
It's like a movie inside a movie.
I am very aware of what I'm doing right now.
Not yet. This is like...
You're calling veto on this?
This is in contention for the best. Like, we need to save this. It has to be between this and something else. We're not there yet. I'm not ready.
You're not ready. Okay, well, then the fight scene.
I would take off the fight scene before I took off Past Part 2 Wandering.
Because this one, again, was like, it was good planning and good writing on the production's part, but it's more of a goof, again.
It was just one of the best examples I've ever seen of, like, character writing. Because mm-hmm. they display, there are four people in that scene. It lasts, like, 5 seconds. But they still manage to find the time to display every one of those characters' individual traits.
Yeah.
And character. Like, you know who they are just from watching them fight. It's amazing. But yeah, between those two scenes from On the World in 80 Days, I will take Passport 2 wandering over that fight.
Okay.
Ah! My soul is bleeding.
And you gotta make the next choice.
If it's between the taxi cab and the priest's speech, I would cut the priest's speech.
Yes.
I
agree with that.
It just doesn't measure up.
It's great writing. It's an amazing speech in the movie. But between these two scenes from On the Waterfront, like, I would watch the cab scene, like, over and over again if I had the choice.
Yeah. We're just getting to a point where you can't. It's not that anything is flawed, it's just some of these are just more amazing than the others. And the cab scene was, it just beats the priest's speech.
Yeah, and to me, like, the cab scene made me feel more, it made me feel more things. I was really emotionally involved in that scene. Whereas the priest's speech, I recognize it as more like a, sort of like a rebel moment.
Yeah, it's
in the movie.
It's a very it's a rousing speech where you're like shaking your fist at the heavens, whereas the taxicab scene is like silently just like slipping a knife blade in between your ribs.
Yeah, knowing fully at the same time that no priest would probably ever speak like this. Like, this is fully a character.
I mean, in the 50s and 40s, maybe they were tougher back then. They don't make them like they used to, those Catholic priests. Just take a beer bottle right to the dome and keep preaching without missing a beat. Yeah, and then him riding the elevator up out of the ship afterwards.
Yeah.
Goddamn.
Yeah.
So.
Taxi cab or Passepartout?
It's come to this.
Taxi cab or Passepartout?
Can't we split the gold medal in half?
We've done this before.
No, we haven't.
Yeah, in the 30s, I think, or
no.
In the 30s or 40s.
No,
we'll go back, and I promise you that we've agreed to disagree. We both chose. I think it was for best male character. No, not best male character, but one of the male characters. I believe we both chose two different people. We agreed to disagree.
Well, we were young and foolish then.
So,
and now we're professionals. Goddammit! So. We've got, as brutal and heart-wrenching as it is, we have to pick one.
You know what my pick is.
I do. You're probably right, but god damn it.
Okay, let's reason this out. The Passport 2 Wandering in Japan, it is visually stunning.
It's not it's the performances in both cases. Because he can show you, it's the same thing with the fight scene. He can show you exactly what that character is with no dialogue and keep it entertaining with no dialogue. And, oh man, it's so good. It's such a wonderful performance. But so is the taxicab scene.
Yeah. Yes. It's such an intense scene. There's like so much that is shared between those two characters. So much truth and like not reconciliation, obviously, but just it's a vital moment in their relationship.
Yeah. It is the climax of the relationship because one of them dies immediately afterwards.
Right after, yeah. Yeah.
Okay, here's how I can justify it. This category is best moment of the decade.
Yes.
And as beautiful as the Passport to silent film is, it is a series of moments rather than one singular moment. Whereas the taxicab scene, it is that one singular moment of mm-hmm. him saying, "It was you, Charlie."
Yeah.
God damn.
Yeah, it stays with you.
Yeah. Still brutal. It does not lose any of its brutality.
Yeah.
Ugh.
I'm sorry to have plunged a knife in your heart.
The Around the World in 80 Days is running out of room on its back for knives. But yeah, moment of the decade, the taxicab scene from On the Waterfront. Even though Around the World in 80 Days is a far greater movie overall than On the Waterfront, it beats it out in that one singular moment.
Yes. Let's recap before we talk more.
All right.
So best male character went to Passepartout from Around the World in 80 Days.
Justice is served in this one case. Gets its due. And the best female character goes to Margot from All About Eve.
Worst male character goes to Honoré Lachaille from Gigi.
Yep.
And his pedophilic tendencies.
His celebrated pedophilic tendencies and celebrating suicide and treating women like objects.
Yep.
It's not one thing with Honoré. It's everything.
Yeah.
Worst female character went to Aunt Alicia, also from Gigi, a cavalcade of rottenness.
The best visuals overall went to Around the World in 80 Days.
Yep. Best visual specific scene went to The Chariot Race from Ben-Hur.
Most stylish went to On the Waterfront.
Best writing went to On the Waterfront. Man, mm-hmm. it was dark horse of this decade.
Yeah.
Winning a lot more than I thought it would.
Yeah. The quote of the decade went to Consult Your Globe, sir.
Consult Your Globe, sir. You got to put some jowls in it when you say it.
I can't do it. Only you.
Consult Your Globe, sir.
From Around the World in 80 Days.
Yep. Worst moment of the decade went to Honoré's song, Thank Heaven for Little Girls. Grody.
Yep. And best moment of the decade went to the taxicab scene in On the Waterfront.
Yeah. Would not have guessed that it would win as many awards as it did going into this.
Yeah.
That was a good movie.
That was a great movie.
That was a great movie.
That was overall, I feel like, a good... there were some shitty moments, but it was overall, I feel like, a good decade.
This decade was all over the place.
Yes.
In terms of quality. This was a real... If I had to sum it up in a phrase, it would be growing pains.
Okay.
It was felt like a really transitional period for the industry as a whole, where you can see it in things like Around the World in 80 Days and Ben-Hur and Bridge Over River Kwai, where we are entering into an era of more modern movies with mm-hmm. color and camera shots and actual characters and writing and whatnot. But then you have these like nostalgic grabs at the past with Marty
and Gigi.
And it's just, it's like three steps forward, two steps back.
Yeah.
Like we can't make up our minds. We have to cling on to the past, but we also want to strive and push the boundaries and move forward. And it's just, this decade just feels like in conflict with itself.
A little bit, yeah.
Or I'm reading currently a book of New Yorker articles from the 40s,
mm-hmm.
and they have articles about the film industry and that, and they were talking about how the film industry was just such a different thing in the 40s, just structured so differently, where they were putting out like a new movie a week, Like, they were just pumping those things out. Mm. So it was just a whole different industry back in those times. And that's why those giant prestige movies like Gone with the Wind exist, because they had to elevate themselves and set themselves apart from the normal, like, run-of-the-mill budget stuff that gets just churned out ad nauseum, like the schlock, right?
Yeah.
So you're either schlock or you're these giant three-hour-long prestige pieces, and that's, like, there's very little middle ground between that. Mm. But now we're starting to understand that there can be a middle ground, and we're starting to create that middle ground where you still have the giant Ben-Hurs and the really small scale like Marty stuff, but you got more things like An American in Paris or, you know, Bridge Over River Kwai, where it's, you know, it's not a grand 3-hour epic, but it's not a budget schlock movie either.
Yeah.
So it's just the transition from one of those eras to another, and we're in that transitional period with this decade.
Overall, to me, I think what is really distinguishable in this decade is the writing.
Yeah.
Like, the writing is getting better. It's a lot more characterization.
Yeah.
It really sets this decade apart from the 30s and 40s.
We are making progress.
Yeah.
It feels like. Yeah, we created the quote of the decade in this decade, because the writing is getting better. It's making us feel more.
Yeah.
Yeah. What an odd decade. Just back and forth. You can just feel the conflict. How they want to move forward, but they don't. They want to make progress, but they want to live in the comfort of the past. They're still kind of freaked out from the war, I think.
That's what I think is, like, that we've seen a lot more movies also that were
critical of the military?
Critical of the military? That wasn't my first thought. Like, the fact that we're bouncing around, to me, indicates we're also looking for different kinds of entertainment.
Yeah.
Different topics, different characters to keep ourselves busy with, you know, I think.
We want to laugh, we want to cry. That makes sense,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we want a little bit more variety and slices of life.
We want to tour the world. We want to visit Paris. Went to Paris twice this decade.
Yeah.
Fixation on Europe because of the war.
Sure.
Yep. The romance.
I mean, Paris is one of the top destinations in the world anyway, so.
We were overwhelmed by the power of the mighty Eiffel Tower.
You're making rhymes.
Yeah. I'm really looking forward to the 60s, though. I think that's when things are really going to kick into high gear.
Yeah.
Especially in the later part when the Hays Code finally goes away. 60s and 70s are going to be nuts.
It's crazy to me that we're already starting the 60s.
Yeah, that feels like the true modern, when we shift over from the past to modern times. Like, that's the boundary, is the 60s.
Yeah. I feel like there's going to be already, maybe in this decade, a lot more movies that I've already watched, and maybe, like, watched a long time ago. So it's going to be a different experience to rewatch them as an adult, and also, like, movies that I watched when I was a kid and didn't speak English, so I watched them dubbed in French, and now I'm going to experience them in a different way.
Yeah. 60s and 70s. Yeah, these are going to be a trip. The two decades I'm looking forward to the most in the whole thing. I'm really curious about the 80s. So I've told you off mic, the 80s is probably the decade I've consumed the least media of anything out of.
Mm-hmm.
So just what stylistically it's going to be like.
I don't even know what movies are on
the list for the 80s?
On the list for the 80s.
I don't either.
That's going to be a surprise.
I feel like we're finally getting out of the past, though. We finally made it. And into the modern, you know, air quotes modern times.
With the 60s?
With the 60s, yeah.
We'll see. We'll see. There was definitely, like you said, we were definitely moving back and forth between more modern things and then yearning for the past in this decade. So I wonder if it's going to, I mean, I definitely know of at least, I keep mentioning Sound of Music. That's, we're going back to the 40s with this one.
Yeah, and the Lawrence of Arabia is that old style grand epic I was talking about.
Yeah, in the we might not be yet out of the
transitional.
This might still be a transitional decade.
Yeah, it'll go into the 60s a bit, but hopefully once we're past the halfway point, hopefully we'll settle down a little bit more and let go of our old conventions. In the 70s, for sure. Once the Hays Code is gone, it's all bets are off, and things are going to get nuts.
There'll be a lot more freedom to do anything.
Which means a lot more boobies in these movies. Free the nipples, as the 70s. Burn your bras. What a season, what a season. Anything else to say about the 50s or any of these movies?
Mm-hmm. Not really.
Looking back on it, it was a stronger decade than I felt it was while in the midst of it. I'll say that.
Definitely. There were a lot of movies that, like you said, it was kind of all over the place. And I think it's reflected in our lists, too. Because...
Yeah, we got a movie that's near the top and a movie that's near the bottom.
Yeah.
Within 2 years of each other?
I think so. Oh, didn't we say that on the retrospective that we would read our list to give an idea
you're right.
Of people? Because
we haven't
done that in a long time.
Yeah, you're right. That's how we'll close this out. Thank you for remembering. My brain, as I've already mentioned, has melted out of my ears. We will get to close out the decade, a full reading of our list, starting from the bottom.
Starting from first?
I would end with first for dramatic flourish.
Okay. Well, I mean, you're welcome to do your list the way you want. I'll do my list from the top.
She's going rogue. Audience, I tried to stop her. Like Pontius Pilate, I washed my hands.
You washed your hands off of it. So current number one is still Casablanca. Yep. It's been there for 18 years now, because it was 1942.
Yep, 18 consecutive, coming up on 2 decades.
Yeah, coming up on 2 decades being there.
Cannot be beaten.
Number two is Around the World in 80 Days.
A crime against humanity.
Number three is Wings. Number four, The Bridge on the River Kwai. Five is All Quiet on the Western Front. Six is Cavalcade. Seven is The Great Ziegfeld.
Surprisingly high.
Yeah. Eight is Rebecca. Nine, How Green Was My Valley. 10, On the Waterfront. 11, The Life of Emile Zola.
Jacques Hughes.
12 is It Happened One Night. 13 is You Can't Take It With You. 14, The Lost Weekend. 15, The Best Years of Our Lives. 16, Ben-Hur.
Smack in the middle of the list.
17, From Here to Eternity. 18, Mrs. Miniver. 19, Mutiny on the Bounty. 20, The Broadway Melody. 21, Grand Hotel. 22, Marty. 23, All About Eve. 24, Going My Way. 25, The Greatest Show on Earth. 26, An American in Paris. 27, Gentleman's Agreement. 28, All the King's Men. 29, Cimarron. 30, Gone with the Wind. 31, Gigi. And 32, Hamlet.
Last and certainly least. For me, audience, you'll remember very early on when I was young and foolish, I called my shot. And said, what was it that caused this? I think it was Broadway Melody.
I think so.
I said, there could not be, three movies worse than this? So I put it at number 90. Oh, how young and foolish and naive I was. So my list starts at 94. And 94 is Hamlet.
Actually, 95, because I missed numbered these movies.
Yeah, 95 is Hamlet.
Yep.
Currently, there are 95 Best Picture winners, so I am basically stating that Hamlet will be the worst movie we watch this thing, which I'm pretty sure of. So number 95, Hamlet. Right above it, number 94, Gigi. Number 93, Gone with the Wind. Number 92, Cimarron. Number 91, Gentleman's Agreement. Number 90, Broadway Melody. Then jumping up to 26, Going My Way. Number 25, You Can't Take It With You. Number 24, Mrs. Miniver. Number 23, All the King's Men. 22, An American in Paris. 21, It Happened One Night. 20, The Greatest Show on Earth. 19, Marty. 18, All Quiet on the Western Front. 17, The Great Ziegfeld. 16, Midway Point for Me, The Life of Emile Zola. 15, Mutiny on the Bounty. 14, From Here to Eternity. 13, Wings. 12, All About Eve. 11, Ben-Hur. Number 10, Cavalcade. Number 9, How Green Was My Valley. Number 8, The Lost Weekend. Number 7, On the Waterfront. Number 6, Rebecca. Number 5, The Best Years of Our Lives. Number 4, The Bridge on the River Kwai. Number 3, Grand Hotel. Number 2, Casablanca. And the number 1 movie on my list currently is Around the World in 80 Days.
It's still shocking to me that we have some of the movies like in the same spot in our list, and then others that have just a wildly different
grand
rating.
Grand Hotel, great movie, I say. For you, it is in the garbage bin.
Yeah.
And you have Wings a lot higher on yours, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. And The Great Ziegfeld, too.
Yeah, The Great Ziegfeld is much higher for me.
Yep. I think we both have How Green Was My Valley in the exact same spot, right?
I think so,
yep, yeah. Both number 9 for us.
Yep.
Yep.
Next week will be the beginning of the 60s.
With The Apartment.
Yep.
Yep. We shall see how the industry progresses. And at the end of that decade, how our lists stand. The change that will happen in the next 10 episodes. Looking forward to it. But until then, thanks everybody for listening.
Yeah, see you next time.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, that's it.